And a very good afternoon to you. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters on 89.1 FM WBOI. I'm your host, Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. And because it's Thursday, of course, you know, that means it's time to explore your outer spaces. I'm here along with Doug Hackbarth for this hour. Doug, glad to be back here with you.
Oh, yeah. Always glad to be here.
And we do want to hear from you, our listeners, today. If you have a question or comment about your outer spaces, do give us a call right now. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And Doug, we've had an awfully pleasant week here in Northeast Indiana. Just perfect weather for mid-September.
Beautiful fall weather. You bet. This is great. And I know there's been some talk about rain and whatnot. And I started saying yesterday, I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, when you look back, it's over by Rockford, Illinois. It's by Madison, Wisconsin right now. It's creeping toward Milwaukee and the Great Lakes, but I'm seeing it starting to break up.
It's
breaking up.
Looking at it on the radar, does look like it's heading just a bit northeast of us. But yeah, we'll wait and see tonight. So far, the forecast hasn't changed from showers likely. So
yeah, and then when you go down to the lower part of that tail of storms, it's really broke up, and so my prediction would be that maybe we'll hit that bottom tail, but it'll probably dissipate before it gets to Fort Wayne. But otherwise, it's moving northeast. Okay. I predict no closer than, South Bend, Angola at the closest.
We should place weekly bets looks like we have a few callers on the line here, so let's open the phones. Of course, we want you to join the conversation. The number one more time, 260-452-1185. Let's open the phones here. We've got Jenny on the line. Jenny, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Jenny.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I just love you guys so
Thank
much
you.
In this
Thank
show.
You. Oh, well, great.
I learned so much. My first house, I had a grandpa who helped me with my yard and taught me everything, but he died. And so now you've replaced him. So thank you very much.
Well, you
I
bet.
You're very
kind. What can we help you with today?
How important is aerating your lawn every year?
It's not crucial. You can aerate your yard when you start to see lots of dead grass down between the blades, if the thatch is really thick. Thatch is actually good for your yard, okay? So unless it just gets killing grass thick, there's no reason to dethatch. As far as aerating, that's instead of dethatching. The aerating allows moisture to break through that penetration of thatch and helps to decay it and break it up. And actually, the grass and root system uses that decaying matter as food. So it's not overly important to thatch, which was not your question, but as far as the aerating goes, it just helps to keep the thatch eliminated. A lot of professional mowers, unless the client insists on the grass being picked up, don't even pick up grass. They just, if you mow it on a regular basis, the pieces are small enough, they're green, and they help feed the yard. So it's pretty much better to just leave it there. But aerating, you know, Jerry Baker, America's master gardener, as he's known, had always said when he cuts the grass, he wears golf shoes so that his shoes are, the spikes are poking the holes
in the
yard.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, he just wears golf shoes.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
So he gets two jobs done at once. Right.
Great idea.
Uh-huh.
I like that idea.
You bet. Now aerating, I'm going to just finish with this. Aerating is pretty important if you're going to plant new grass seed. It will help the grass to connect better. And then also, if you're fertilizing, or actually fertilizing more so than the weed and feed, because the weed killer actually sticks to the leaves of the broadleafed weeds, so aerating doesn't matter there. But as far as fertilizing goes, it also helps get the fertilizer down in. So if you just wanted to thatch with your golf shoes before you apply a fertilizer, cut your grass, use your golf shoes, and maybe a day or two later put the fertilizer down.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Jenny, thanks for the call and for the kind words as well.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Thank you.
Have a very good day. We do want to hear from you today. Give us a call if you have a question or comment about your outer spaces. The number 260-452-1185. Or if you'd like to call us from outside the 260, it's toll-free 1-800-471-9264. More callers on the line. Let's go to Mary. Mary, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I want to make sure we have done the right thing here. We have cut and burned many, many dead white pines that appeared to have a beetle infestation.
Oh, no.
And then we have sprayed all the other white pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if we did the right thing and if there's anything else more we should do. If we cut more pine trees, it won't spread as much, or what's your opinion on all of this?
Well, when you say beetles, are we talking really beetles, or are we talking borers that get into the bark?
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah, borers.
The borers. Okay, well then, yeah.
They're little teeny holes in them.
Yeah, because beetles will just fly in, do whatever they do, usually eat foliage of leaves and fly out. And so treating beetles is hard to do. It's easier to treat grubs. But let's get off the beetles, since actually borers is your question.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You do need to spray with a borer insecticide. And really, this is a great time to do it. Most any time's a good time. When you see the problem, get them sprayed. As far as burning it goes, that will kill those borers for sure, and actually help the situation. So,
well, would we be well advised to cut down more of the pine trees, even the live ones, to save maybe some more good ones?
I wouldn't cut any more than I needed to. I mean, don't cut any more than what looks good.
Okay.
When you start butchering the plants and they don't look good anymore, then it's time to replace them.
Is this a situation, Doug, where you might recommend having a professional take a look?
Well, she certainly could have a professional, and that's not me. I don't do the bugs. I don't have a license to do it.
Right. Perhaps a certified arborist or something like that.
Right. Yeah. They could come out and look, and they would probably even perform the spraying service for you. And sometimes the professionals can get the much stronger product that works better. I'm licensed to buy the products. I'm not licensed to go to people's homes and apply it. I can only apply it at my place.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I like, because I'm not going to sue myself
yeah.
when the dog dies.
Right. Well, Mary, best of luck with your problem there. Hopefully those borers are done for now.
Yeah, but just trim what is necessary and make sure that the shrubs, the trees, the pines look good when you're finished. And then treat the rest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Have a very good day. Got a couple of callers on the line here. Let's keep the phones open. We've got Katie on line 3. Katie, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello.
Hi, how are you, Katie?
Oh, I'm okay. I have a bit of a problem in my front yard.
Mm-hmm.
I have a poison ivy vine that keeps coming back. It's growing up amongst some decorative ivy that I really don't want to destroy, and it's right next to a paper birch that we've had it's been there for at least 30 years.
Sure.
And I know there's products I can purchase to spray on it. However, they all say it's going to kill everything else around it.
Well, Roundup will kill the poison ivy. It will also kill your decorative ivy that you don't want to lose.
Right.
But it won't kill the birch.
Yeah, well, that's what I was concerned too.
Yeah, and you can regrow the ivy. So you could spray it on there. You're going to end up killing. And it's really tough when it's growing up a tree. It's a long, long plant. And you're going to spray it and you're going to kill it. But it's going to be hard to kill all of it at one time. And so it might be something you'll have to treat a couple times this year and then start it again next year. But it's going to take time to get rid of that poison ivy. It's important to get rid of it, I think. I don't like poison ivy.
Because I've suffered through.
Oh, yeah. But as long as you just spray the bark of the birch tree, it won't get to the root system. It won't hurt the tree. It's only when it hits the growing foliage and the growing tips that it kills the plant down all the way down. So it's not like a regular weed killer that could actually be poured into the ground and kill everything.
Okay.
So that's what made Roundup such a popular product. And then after it's used, you can come back and replant.
Right.
As far as that ivy goes, I mean, if there's some way that you can pull all that off the tree and separate the two, I can't imagine how. They're probably so intertwined.
Oh, yes, I won't dare.
That you can't do it. And, of course, you'd want to wear long sleeve everything
and wash those clothes very well.
And throw them out.
Yeah, throw them out, yeah.
Yeah.
So even if if it's even some of the ivy that's close to the tree but not going up it, and it gets sprayed into the ground, will that get to the roots?
Well, just like I said with the poison ivy, you're not going to kill it all. And if you're spraying all of it up on the tree bark and you stop there and wait and see what's left, see what's growing after that, and you may end up having to spray just that a couple of times. And more than likely, the stuff that's down in the ground isn't going to die all at one time because it's just too tough. And maybe once you get rid of the top part, it's a little easier to grab a hold of it with your gloves and everything and pull it out of the regular ivy. And once you do that, you can treat it. And then as little pieces start to come back, you can spot treat them. If you damage a little ivy leaf here and there, it won't matter. But you've got to get it eliminated down to a smaller workable solution and then go for it after that. It is a tough job. The easy way would be kill everything, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which I really don't want to. That's
no. The scorched earth is probably not the way we want to go.
Right, right.
No.
All right.
So there's no easy solution.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it sounds like I'm in for a battle a bit.
I think so.
Okay.
Very, very good luck, Katie.
Put up a fence and a sign that says poison ivy, and there you go. You're
just
done.
Leave it.
Okay.
Good luck, Katie, and thank you very much for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. We have one more caller on the line before we have to go to a break. Let's get Greg on the line. Greg, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Greg.
I have a problem. I'm a gardener that puts his garden in really late.
Yeah.
And I put some vegetables in early July. They were primarily squash plants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a white coating on these leaves, squash leaves now. It's
you're getting mildew.
Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is great mildew season.
Yeah. Well, I don't have enough sun, I think, maybe.
Yeah, that would help. And don't ever water in the afternoon or later because that just creates more mildew.
I see. Okay.
Watering, if you water, would have to be in the morning.
Well, I tend to water with a hose that has a shower head on it, and I try not to water the leaves. I try to water the earth around
sure,
it. Is that
right.
The right technique?
That is the right technique, just okay. So that it's done early in the mornings and not very often, especially now. These cool nights and cool mornings when we wake up, the plants are, they're just like always wet. I don't even know that you'd ever have to water this again.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because eventually we'll get rain, but not this week.
We'll see, Doug. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay,
but no, well, that's, and anytime you see heavy dew in the mornings, it's mildew prone, and
right.
It'll get on your rose bushes, it'll get on your grapevines, it'll get on those flowering plum plants. There's a lot of things that mildew like, and
nothing much
definitely,
I can do about it other than just.
Well, yes, you can get garden sulfur.
Garden sulfur.
And it can be dusted on, or you can put it in water and spray it, but it doesn't dissolve in water. So when you put it in water, you have to shake, 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 then spray, then shake it again. I'm not going to say it three times, then spray.
Yeah.
So you see what I mean? Because it doesn't dissolve readily in water, you have to keep it stirred up ever so often so that when the water comes out, it pulls sulfur with it. Then the technique is the water evaporates and the fine dusting sulfur is left on the leaves.
Right. And if I do dust, however, I should do it right on the leaves.
And very lightly. And I told a lady the other day, just get a handful and stand way up tall and just take and throw it in the air and let it settle down lightly onto your leaves. You don't want it to look like you just buried it in flour.
I see. Okay.
It needs to be very light. Remember, with the water technique, the water evaporates and some invisible film is left on your leaves that works.
Yeah.
So anything you can put on dry that's that light, you can't possibly do it lighter. Will be good, but heavy would not be so great.
Right. I have the same problem with some peonies. I should do the same thing with them.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Peonies are very susceptible to mildew.
Very good. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Greg, thanks for the call. Have a very good day and good luck. We do need to take a break here, but I do want to invite more listeners to get in touch for this Midday Matters Outer Spaces. The number, it's 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Hi, I'm Julia Meekham. What's the rumpus on this week's Meet the Music? Clever guitar vocal originals from Ryan Kerr, the one-man banditude of Poop Deflux, and Leavin' Rockwell Rocks On. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM or listen online at nipr.fm. A two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music.
It takes patience to perpetuate pickles.
Good things come to those who wait, and for listener Joni Vick, it's a pickle like the ones Grandma Minnie used to make.
Not so crunchy, but very juicy.
A lost recipe found later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, comic W. Kamau Bell, host of the FX series Totally Biased, which brings an African-American perspective to political comedy. On one of Bell's comedy tours, to attract a multicultural audience, he made this offer.
If you bring a friend of a different race, you get in 2-for-1.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Whether it's the brutal civil war in Syria, the incredible growth of China, Russia's rebound, or the debt crisis in Europe, money, religion, politics, well, they may be important, Robert Kaplan tells us, but not as important as mountains, oceans, desert, and climate. I'm Neil Conan, the revenge of geography, plus Cornel West and Tavis Smiley declare war on poverty. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Twelve 25 here at WBOY. It's Midday Matters Outer Spaces. Thanks very much for tuning in today. Let's take a quick look at the phone lines. Looks like nobody's in the phone bank at the moment. So if you have a question or comment about your outer spaces, give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. And if you'd like to call us toll-free, that number, it's 1-800-471-9264. Doug and I were talking just a little bit over the break here about, how to get your plants to bloom.
There's so many methods of how to fool plants into growing
and
blooming.
And we were talking about how much of a mystery tomatoes in particular can be.
In particular, yes. Well, see, the thing about a plant is if it thinks it's going to die, it will reproduce itself first. That's the rule. And so if you baby a plant so much, like a tomato plant, for example, if you baby that tomato plant and you keep it watered and never let it go into stress and you keep it well fertilized, that plant's going to be happy and grow and not think about reproducing. Well, the way that a tomato reproduces, it first it flowers, then it produces a tomato and drops it, and the seeds reproduce. So you have to stress your tomatoes often to get the best results. And
how often in a season say like this?
So what you would want to do is you would want to get your plants established. You do baby them at first. That's good. Get them well established. Get them up a foot and a half, 2 feet tall, and you know what, get them up to some size. And then what you do is you don't water them and you watch them. Come back in 3 days, see how they look. When they start to stress, let's say it takes 5 days in the beginning for that plant to actually show signs of stress, then what that does to you is you say, okay, I'll subtract 1 day. I'll wait 4 days. And that's how often I'll water it. If sometime through the growing season, because it gets bigger and because the root system gets larger, it might want to, and the weather gets hotter, it might want to go into stress a little quicker. Like, let's say it goes into stress in 3 days. Well, then you wait 2 days to water it. So you actually play games with it. But it's important. If you want tomatoes, and who doesn't?
I certainly do. I was disappointed you didn't have any today.
You let it go into stress. And this is true of so many plants. You know, we've often said, people call and say, well, I have this flowering tree, let's say like a Rose of Sharon, and it doesn't want to bloom. Someone called me 2 weeks ago about that. You know, you can take a shovel at the right time of year when it's supposed to be thinking about blooming. You can take a shovel and actually shove that shovel into the ground about halfway around the plant. Boom. It thinks you're going to dig it up. It thinks it's going to die. But you stop halfway, and it will produce flowers thinking it's going to die. You can fool plants in many ways, but stress is a good one. Not fertilizing it so much is a good way of stressing plants, and we have more colors, so I'll go back into that topic further later.
We'll pop back into that. We also will get to a question from Luis in just a few moments about an azalea bush. First, though, we want to open the phones and go to Bruce. Bruce, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi,
Bruce.
Good afternoon. Hi there, everybody. What do I need to stress a poinsettia that I'm growing outside?
Never. However, it does go into my category of ways to trick plants. Mm-hmm. Poinsettias and chrysanthemums, like the hardy garden mums that you see, we trick those into blooming by day length. Now, with mm-hmm. poinsettias, there's not much fooling around, because poinsettias, you want them to bloom around Christmas time, which means any time from around Thanksgiving on. And if you do everything according to nature, they will naturally bloom at Christmas time, and you don't want to stress poinsettias.
Now, my question is, I planted it. It was rather feeble, and I said, oh, I'll probably never make it. But I've grown another one outside before, and it got to be basically a small tree before
yes,
it died.
Yes, giants.
But wonderful, actually. But anyway, now, so what should I do to make sure I can get this in, you know, what point in the fall here, and do the necessary things to get those blooms?
All right, it's in the ground, right?
Yes, it's outside.
Right, you need to first dig it up, get it in a pot, probably a sizable one. I would guess 10 to 12 inches, maybe as big as 14 inch, but 12 is a good size for a well-grown plant outside in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Get it in that pot and leave it outside for another week or so. Just watch your weather. I hate to see it get down into the mid-40s or lower. We never get them in the greenhouse. We keep them above 62 at night. So, but we're working with mm-hmm. small cuttings. You're working with a well-established, hardened-off plant. But get it established in the pot for about a week or so, and you want to do that now so that you can leave it outside and let it be taken care of that way. But eventually, then you have to move it into the house. But the trick to bringing a poinsettia into bloom, first of all, digging it up is going to do that root pruning thing I talked about a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make it set bud. The fact that the cool nights that it's receiving, cool nights also make plants come into bloom. It's just that poinsettias don't really like it very cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect for an azalea or a chrysanthemum. But for a poinsettia, they don't really like it real cold. But get it into the house, and the trick to bringing it into bloom is never have any artificial light hit that plant after dark. See, every day after the first day of fall, it just gets shorter and shorter and shorter, and the plant recognizes the day length, and it's short days, long nights, that make a poinsettia bloom. And okay. Poinsettias are incredibly touchy to light. One lamp turned on where that light hits the poinsettia plant, and it will not bloom. See, the lighting isn't for growing a good plant. It's for tricking it, but not for good growth.
So basically, what I'm hearing is just dig it up, get it in that pot for a week or so. And
get it in the house.
Move it in. Where should it be?
Sunny window
for a while. Okay, I've got a screen porch, so that's perfect.
All right, just so it doesn't get too cold now. These things, if they get too cold, especially after you're doing your root pruning that you're going to do when you dig it up, if they get too cold and too wet, they will rot on you. Miraculously, one day, it'll be all drooped down and the game's over. So you don't really want it much below 58 after you take it in the house. So if that porch doesn't run below 58, it gets plenty of sunlight, you've got a good spot. And as long as no light hits it after dark, like a lamp or a porch light or even a street light can mess them up.
I know you got other callers. One last thing. And when I do bring it in, you know, it's too cold out there and I bring it in, how do you keep light off of it then? Just when the daylight goes down, you just move it away from any?
Yep, natural light. If it's in a sunny window and you don't turn any lights on at dark, it will do its thing naturally.
Okay.
You don't have to put it in a closet.
Right.
A lot of people have heard that. Put poinsettia in a closet, but they never ask, when should I bring it out?
Just leave it in the closet.
Yeah, some people will wait 2 weeks and say, when should I bring it out? Some people will wait 6 weeks and say, when do I bring it out?
Oh, no.
The answer is 15 hours later. 15 hours later, that's what it needs, 14 to 15 hours of darkness each night. If you did have a lamp or a light that was hitting it, you could get a giant box, something that maybe a washer and dryer came in. I mean, a giant box if you have a big plant. And you could literally set the box over the plant at 5 o'clock at night, let's just say at dinner time, whatever that is for you, and take it off the next morning.
Well, great stuff. Thanks for all your help. I guess for everybody needs to know, at some point you have to let your poinsettia out of the closet.
There you go. That's right. Let him out of the closet.
Bruce, thank you so much for the call.
Have a great day, you guys.
Thanks. You as well. We need to get to a break in just a moment, but first we've had this listener question from Louise. She'll take her answer off the air. Of course, Louise has an azalea bush that she just moved outside. She wants to know how to protect it in the wintertime.
Well, azaleas are generally winter hardy. However, the ones you buy in a nursery are winter hardy. The ones you buy in a flower shop, like I just saw one earlier this week that went to a funeral home. It was what they call florist quality azalea. They're not as hardy around here. They're hardier in Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina.
Warmer climes.
Yeah, something a little warmer than Fort Wayne. But if it were me, I'd put it out and just hope that it survives. I would. The place to put it is someplace where it gets morning sun, maybe all the way up to 2 in the afternoon, and then in late afternoon it doesn't really have to have sun, but morning sun's good. Plant it fairly close to the house where that will help protect it. And this is where I'd have to ask her a question. Was it blooming recently? Like, was it forced into bloom recently or not? If it was forced into bloom recently and it's finished blooming right now, you still have to trim it. Just trim it. Give it a haircut.
All right.
If this is one you bought from a nursery and it's not in bloom, just plant it and don't trim it, because it will probably have already been trimmed, and you won't trim it until after spring once it blooms. So that means trimming it like in, oh, late May.
Hmm, okay.
So it just depends. And if it's the florist quality azalea, it may not survive.
Well, Louise, if you'd like to call us back and leave a message with our phone room or perhaps send us an email with a little more information.
Yeah, was it blooming when you bought it recently or not? That's the real question.
Perhaps we can dive a little deeper. But thank you very much for your question. We do need to take a break. When we come back, we have a question from Tricia. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. We need to stop for the news, though. Stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, comic W. Kamau Bell, host of the FX series Totally Biased, which brings an African-American perspective to political comedy. On one of Bell's comedy tours, to attract a multicultural audience, he made this offer.
If you bring a friend of a different race, you get in 2-for-1.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOI News. State lawmakers are investigating the seclusion and restraint of children who have special needs in Hoosier schools. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, legislators are looking for ways to greater control the practice.
The medical community and special needs advocacy groups largely agree that children in school environments who have special needs sometimes require seclusion or restraint when they become out of control. But Indiana is one of 19 states that does not govern the practice in any way. Logansport Republican Senator Randy Head says that has to change.
Last year, a teacher or teachers duct taped a student to a chair. This student was had autism spectrum disorder, and this was a punishment for them. And the chair that they were duct taped to was intended to help the posture of students with cerebral palsy.
Head is proposing legislation that would regulate what types of practices are acceptable, mandate teacher training, require parental consent and notification, and create a reporting system for schools. Indiana Resource Center for Autism Director Kathy Pratt says teacher training is one of the most important components of any legislation.
I see many teachers who are not given the tools. I see many teachers who react out of fear, and when they react out of fear, they oftentimes respond in an inappropriate fashion.
Pratt says it's just as important for teachers to learn how to de-escalate a situation as it is to learn how to deal with a crisis. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
A Democratic legislator is seeking an ethics investigation into Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' new job as president of Purdue University. WBOI's Sean Beter has more.
State Representative Charlie Brown of Gary argues that Daniels violated state ethics rules when he used a state government email list to respond to stories about $380,000 in renovations being done on the Purdue president's office. Brown also asked Inspector General David Thomas to reconsider an opinion, clearing the Republican governor to lobby state lawmakers as soon as he takes over at Purdue in January. Thomas is a Daniels appointee who decided that a one-year cooling-off period would not apply to the governor. Daniels' spokeswoman did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Daniels asked Purdue officials last week to halt the president's office renovations following media reports about the project. For WBOI News, I'm Sean Beter.
The Fort Wayne Tin Caps opened the Midwest League Championship Series in Wisconsin last night. WBOI's Doug Gruber has the results.
The Tin Caps had to play catch-up last night against the Timber Rattlers. Wisconsin scored a run in the first inning on a wild pitch, which the Tin Caps matched in the third, scoring on an error. Wisconsin went up by a run in the fourth, which the Tin Caps matched in the eighth, on a Duan L. Jones RBI triple. The score remained 2-2 through 9 innings, and the Tin Caps were in extra innings for the first time since July 21st. Wisconsin ended the contest in the 10th inning. With the bases loaded and two outs, a wild pitch gave the Timber Rattlers a 3-2 win. The series continues this afternoon in Wisconsin at 1 o'clock as the Tin Caps try to even the best-of-five series. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
An Indiana farm linked to a salmonella outbreak from cantaloupe that killed two people has now pulled its watermelons from the market. WBOY's Joe Janizek reports.
The Indiana State Department of Health said it had no immediate reports of illnesses connected to watermelons from Chamberlain Farms of Owensville. Agency's spokeswoman, Amy Real, says that the salmonella strain found in the farm's watermelon is different from that found in its cantaloupe last month. Grocery chain Schnucks says it removed Chamberlain Farms watermelons from all of its stores after being contacted by the grower. An attorney for the farm didn't immediately return a phone call seeking comment Wednesday. The Food and Drug Administration says the cantaloupe contamination killed 2 Kentucky residents and sickened over 200 people in 22 states. For WBOI News, I'm Joe Januszek.
Indiana State Police and other law enforcement agencies will be collecting leftover, expired, or unwanted prescription drugs later this month to prevent theft and abuse. Hoosiers with unwanted or expired prescription drugs can turn them in anonymously at most state police posts and other sites from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. September 29th. Only pills and liquid drugs will be accepted. The drive is part of a nationwide effort by the Drug Enforcement Administration. During the last prescription drug take-back initiative in April, Indiana residents turned in more than 1,500 pounds of unwanted medicines to be disposed of by the state police. And now back to your host for Midday Matters, Sean Beter.
It's 12:43. This is Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. Of course, we're exploring your outer spaces today with Doug Hackbarth, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call. The phones are open right now. It's that number is 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And of course, if you'd like to call us toll-free, that number is 1-800-471-9264. And before we pop back into Doug's list about getting your plants, maybe pushing your plants a little bit.
Fooling them into
fooling your plants.
Booming.
We did have a question from Trisha. Trisha says she wants to know if it's too late to plant grass seed this year.
Absolutely not. I've always had a deadline date of October the 10th, and that's about 4 weeks from now. So you've got plenty of time. Now, if I say the deadline's October 10th, just tell yourself it's October 1, and you'll be in real good shape.
Just be sure you get it down on time.
Get it down, water it, and anytime you have a drought condition like this week will be, since it's not going to rain, you may have to water
Doug,
it more than
Doug,
once.
Doug.
we'll see.
Trisha, thank you very much for your question, and good luck getting that seed down here. Looks like we have a caller on the line. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Gene on the line. Gene, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Gene.
I have a very healthy 4-foot-tall lilac bush.
Yeah.
And I would like to move it. Can you tell me the best way to plan that?
Well, absolutely. Cool nights. You know, the weather we're having right now, this is ideal weather. It could even be better if it was cloudy and misty or something like that, because then there's just very little shock. But understand that the lilac is going to drop its foliage before too long, within the next 6 weeks. So if you move it, you'll push that procedure up. So you can either do it now, and you'll lose leaves earlier, or you can do it later.
Would it be healthier to wait for later?
No. I think either time would work great. I personally like to do it a little earlier because I like to see better root establishment before winter hits. There's people who tell you you can do it in November, December, and I don't see how those roots can ever get established through the winter months. I think then you're just lucky if it survives through the winter and then takes off in the spring. So I like sooner rather than better.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do I just water it when I put it in the new site?
Yep, that's it. You dig it up, okay. You plant it. Try not to plant it any deeper than it is. You know, this is the thing about shrubs and trees. They should always be planted slightly shallower than they were. When you buy a plant, a shrub or a tree, you know, I sold one yesterday, and I said, now, I should plant it deep, right? No, plant it slightly higher than it is in the pot, because it allows for any settlement. But planting a shrub or a tree deeply is bad. Planting tomato plants deeply is good. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
All right. And Gene, have a very good day, and thanks for your call.
And Sean.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Bye-bye. Gene. On that note, too, as far as transplanting, watering is really all that's necessary. You could put a handful of granulated fertilizer down or possibly bone meal. But as far as fertilizing on a regular basis, this would be a good time to think about no more fertilizer for the rest of the year, except the grass. Yards need to be fertilized practically up to November.
Just about everything else, though, you can
you should knock it off, because fertilizer keeps plants soft and growing. And when you get a hard, unexpected freeze, those soft plants will be more damaged than if they were allowed to toughen up now.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. We have a few more callers here. Let's get Mark on the line. Excuse me, Mark. You're on Midday Matters. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mark.
I have more of a lawn question for
you. Sure.
Around this time of year, I usually get this invasive kind of light green grass that comes in.
Oh, huh? Is it real long and thin-bladed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Is there any way to get rid of that without killing everything around it?
Well, the problem with that grass is it's not a broadleafed weed. It's more like crabgrass. And the thing to do, people love to put crabgrass preventer and crabgrass weed killer on in the spring, but no one ever wants to mess around with it in the fall. But you can do it. It's a good time to do it, because those crabgrasses will drop seeds, which will make more crabgrass next year. Mm-hmm. So crabgrass preventer can prevent that from happening on next year's yard. I think you can get crabgrass killer, but then that will kill any grass,
really,
if it's a spray. So if you have that, you might want to go out and spot it, unless it's just totally thick. It's totally thick, I would say start with the preventer, and just keep mowing.
Okay. Usually, I always put it on in the spring, like you said. So
yes.
Is there like August or July?
I would do it now.
But now.
September.
Okay.
September and or even early October, but now. And then in the spring, if it's a crabgrass preventer, the earlier you put it on, the better. So like early April, like this year, it would have been early March would have been right.
You're right.
Summer was here by early April. Well, really, it was 87 on March the 4th. Summer was here early March. It was crazy. Yeah.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks very much for your call.
You bet.
Very good. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a great day. One more caller on the line, and then we'll take a quick break here. Let's go to Bobby. Bobby, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello. Yeah, I have a mandevilla.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that could be mulched to save it through the winter, or does that have to be brought inside?
It would have to be brought in. It's a tropical plant. However, I wouldn't be in any rush to bring it in, because, as we know, if we get a light frost or two, the leaves will fall off your plant. That's not going to kill the plant. In fact, I would just as soon you take it in with the leaves off. So here's what you're going to do when you take it in. You're going to trim it way back to the original trellis that it was on when you bought it. You're going to cut everything else off, and you're going to cut it back to that size. And then if there's any leaves left, pull them off, because there's probably whitefly eggs on the bottoms of those leaves. Pull them off and just throw them away so the plant is literally bare.
Okay.
And then spray those stems spray the stems with soapy water, and then take the rest of the soap bucket of water and pour it right through the root system. Now, is this plant in the ground or in a pot?
It's in the ground.
In the ground. So you're going to want to dig it up and get it into a pot. So, again, because I don't care if the leaves fall off, you need to do it sometime within the next, you could wait another week or two. You might as well wait until the weather starts to turn bad and then repot it. But at the time you repot it, that's when you cut it way back. Cut it way back, repot it, and don't go crazy with the giant pot, because now you're not going to have any leaves. You're going to cut off 80% of the plant, so you won't need a giant pot. 12-inch, probably. 12-inch, 14 tops.
And when you say soapy water, what kind of soap?
Yeah, you know, my wife and I talked about that at lunch today. What I tell people is mix up soapy water just like you were going to wash pots and pans, and then put more soap in it, a little more, make it a little stronger, and then spray the stems and pour the rest through the soil so that you can't really pour it through the soil until you get it into a pot, get it rooted. Okay. So in that instance, but you don't want to dig it up with all those long stems on it. I found, though, with mandevillas, if I cut them off, I just leave all those cut off stems on the trellis. The darn things keep right on blooming for weeks without the plant. It's kind of funny, but eventually they shrivel up and then it's time to clean up.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so.
Okay.
Well, Bobby, thanks. Thanks for your call and have a great day.
You too.
All right. We're going to take just a quick break here. Then we'll have a few minutes left in the program. If you'd like to get in under the wire here, give us a call with your question or comment. The number is 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll-free. It's 1-800-471-9264. Going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is Midday Matters.
I'm Neil Conan. Every day brings fresh developments and interesting stories to tell. At Talk of the Nation, we look for the stories that matter to you. From international news to the latest campaign politics to the issues that touch your family, tune in for Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
With the BBC's NewsHour, get an in-depth take on what's been happening in the world.
At least 5 people are dead and dozens more missing.
Because the world is always changing.
What's been the reaction then?
There is an overwhelming sense of anger.
And the BBC understands what those changes mean for you.
Bills and wages still have to be paid. Some producers couldn't manage.
The life of the world in an hour. NewsHour from the BBC.
Weekday mornings at 9, here on WBOI.
On the next Fresh Air, comic W. Kamau Bell, host of the FX series Totally Biased, which brings an African-American perspective to political comedy. On one of Bell's comedy tours, to attract a multicultural audience, he made this offer.
If you bring a friend of a different race, you get in 2-for-1.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters Outer Spaces on WBOY. I'm Sean Beter along with Doug Hackbarth. As I mentioned, just a few minutes left in this hour. If you have a quick question for us, give us a call, 260-452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. Doug and I were talking over the break here. You wanted to add something about the mandevillas.
Just a couple of things about that mandevilla, the mandevilla plants that you keep over in the wintertime. Run them dry all winter long, not like you did in the summer where you kept them watered. And don't expect early blooming next year. This is the thing. When we ship those up from Florida, they have all that warmth and sunshine way before we do, and they come up budded and blooming, and they're beautiful. When you grow them here in Fort Wayne over the wintertime, you're losing a good month of blooming time. So they're not going to bloom until mid to late June. It's just something to consider before keeping them all winter long. That's basically it.
All right. Yep. And we did have Annie call a question in for us here. Annie says, what's the best time to transplant native perennial plants?
Well, perennials transplanted any time that it's not hot and drought. Okay? It's not hot now. It's maybe hitting the 80s. But the thing about the weather now is the cool nights. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, back when we were hitting 87, the nighttime was dropping down to 72.
Right.
We're mostly dropping down into the 50s, close to the 40s. Last night it was 62, but
forecast is forecast is showing 56 tonight, Friday night, 45, 49 into Saturday. So
perfect time to transplant. You know, it's beautiful weather, and it's cool nights, those plants will be happy.
All right. Mm-hmm. Annie, thanks very much for your question here. I wanted to get just in the last 3 minutes of the program here into a few more of these issues of how to fool your plants.
Well,
tricking your plants into blooming. And Doug, you wanted to highlight ethylene gas.
Ethylene gas, you know, ethylene gas can be good or it can be bad. If you store flowers in a refrigerator, like cut flowers, and you have apples and fruit, ethylene gas will age those flowers quickly, and it'll shorten their life. So even apples on the countertop next to a bouquet of flowers will shorten the life of that bouquet. So ethylene gas in that way is bad. But if you're growing a pineapple plant, or you're growing a bromeliad, which is what a pineapple plant is, but there's bromeliads that people have that flower most of the summer. Hmm. And the trick to bringing those into bloom is to set apples around them, especially in March or April.
Really?
Yeah, and the idea is to take a couple of apples and roll them around and just bruise them up really good so that they age faster. And you could actually, if the bromeliad would fit in a paper bag, or you could use a plastic bag, and put the apples down beside the plant, cover the whole works with either a paper bag, even just loose paper, because that will trap the gas in place for about 2 weeks.
Hmm. So you'll get your bromelia to
bloom
up to the edge of blooming just with a few farmers market purchases
apples.
There.
That's right. And the pineapple, if you were trying to grow a pineapple plant, then it would produce a pineapple the same way. I didn't realize this before, but another trick to bringing a pineapple itself into fruit is tip the plant over for 2 weeks on its side.
Really?
Now, bromeliads like to have water in the center of their crown. So after you put it in the center of the crown, maybe a day or so after it sort of drains away, although sometimes it never drains away, but still tip the plant over and leave it on its side for a couple weeks. And that causes the fruit. Now, that's a new one to me, though. I hadn't heard that one before. But the ethylene gas, I'm playing games with my peace lilies. You know, I get peace lilies in the greenhouse, and they're in bloom, and that's the way people want them. And then I have some that are out of bloom. And so we've been laying apples around in the greenhouse, and they really popped into bloom. But I'm going to tell you something, Sean. It seems like they bloom best in March.
Mm-hmm.
And then the equal month in the fall, which might be September,
All right.
Automatically. So whether the apples is doing it or it just happens to be that day length, we'll talk more about this next week.
I was just going to say, your list is quite long here, so perhaps we'll touch on it next week. We hope you'll join us next week at this time as well with your plant and garden questions. Doug, thanks very much for being with us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. The time is 1 o'clock. Fresh air is next. Have a great day, everybody. From WH.